Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm Brad Jackson.
And welcome back, Norm. We have our sidekick in the office this week. How's it going?
Happy to be here. Good.
So, experiencing some kind of like, you know, Halloween hangover, so we didn't get a good Halloween-themed cigar for October, but today, what are we smoking, Brad?
Well, we are smoking the Tatawahe Kruger.
It is the annual monster release from Tatawahe, which, you know, it's a different themed cigar every year, and for the 2016 edition, it is the Kruger.
I just said that.
Oh shit! Yeah, it's a 7.25x48 Bellicoso with a Mexican San Andreas wrapper over a Nicaraguan binder and fillers.
So, needless to say,
it might give you nightmares.
It's a damn good cigar. As most of just about everything I've smoked from Tatawahe, each year, I mean, it's always a little bit different flavor or flair that they do on the cigar. So it's not like you're getting the same cigar year in or year out. I'm really digging on, you know, medium to full.
Like a box press torpedo, nearly.
Yeah. That's why they're not afraid to change up, especially when it comes to these monster series. Because I remember a few years ago when they came out with their Jekyll and Hyde pairing, 1 year was the Jekyll, and that was a really mild, maybe mild plus at most cigar, which was a total departure from what they normally do. And then they came out with his counterpart, Mr. Hyde, which was back to a little bit more fuller body, a little bit more wild.
Yeah. We had the Jekyll. I don't think I ever smoked the Hyde. And yeah, these cigars are super limited. What they do is they release 666 designer boxes for each of the cigars, and they only send them out to 13 stores, the unlucky 13. And if your store is ever an unlucky 13, it's a one-time honor, so the next year it'll be somebody else. Yeah. And then the remainder of the cigars are released in a more traditional box, so you can get them at, you know, regular or, you know, some of the Tatawahe dealers in, you know, limited quantities. But yeah, this year's box looks awesome. It's the special boxes are all kind of coffin shaped, but this one is the red and green, red and black, you know, Freddy Krueger sweater style.
Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing too. Like if you look at the label on the cigar, like it's very simple, but it definitely supports that red and green of a Freddy sweater on the cigar label, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Yeah, one of my favorite boxes they've done so far is the Jason, which is looked like a hockey mask. And if you can't get one of the full-size monsters, usually they in the early part of the year, they'll release the either the Pudgy Monsters or the Skinny Monsters series.
I think they're doing the Skinny Monster series.
Yeah, which is like it's a box with one of each of the previous year, like a smaller version of the Monster series for one for each year. So if you've missed out on trying one, you can get the set and smoke your way through their last nine releases at this point.
Yeah, that was the thing, you know, this being a 7.25x48, this is a long skinny bastard. Like,
yeah, I accidentally hit the pop filter on the mic a couple times, so I'm not used to having anything this long.
You see that, but the skinny monsters they're coming with are a true Lancero size, so they're gonna be even skinnier than those.
Nice.
Yeah, I've had a few of the Lancero, you know, not from Tatawahe, but, you know, from some other companies, and I kind of dig the Lancero shape. I mean, it's got its practicality.
Oh, I'm personally a big fan of the Lancero shape, but it's dropped drastically in popularity amongst a lot of cigar manufacturers, just, I guess, due to sales. People,
yeah, it's just kind of, the it's trend kind of is hard towards, to make and
well, the trend is towards big 60, ring gauges.
Yes. Well, 60, I mean, 60, you know,
64, 70.
I mean, well, I look at it and, you know, I'm like, all right, you know, just, you look at the, you know, just judging it by the diameter, and I'm like, I don't feel like I'm going to get my money's worth, but the length, I'm like, oh, it still turns out to be an hour and, you know, half smoke in a lot of instances.
And so, the flavor of it, too, is usually kind of different than whatever the standard production, because it's that ratio of wrapper to filler is
the ratio,
so much different.
The ratio makes a difference, just like in cooking or anything else. You have more of one, less of the other. It's going to change the finished product.
So, yeah, speaking of the Kruger, really digging it. You know, one of the things that I really like is it's got a strong spicy note. So, that's one of the things that I always dig in cigars. So,
welcome to primetime, bitch.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, you know, you got Kruger and the furnaces and everything else. Only fitting that, you know, this would have, you know, a touch of that spice to kick things up.
Speaking of burning things.
I was going to keep going on the cigar for a second, but sure, let's change subject. I was just going to mention that the big difference between the dress boxes and the regular non-painted dress boxes will actually net you more physical cigars. There are 13 cigars in that box versus 10 in the regular box. That and the collectability makes the whole thing hard to find.
Yeah, those boxes are pretty awesome. I don't even have to get a hold of the cigars. I'd like to have like a set of the boxes. But as I said, speaking of burning things, this episode will come out on Election Day, and also, you know, we're kind of recording this the day after the 5th of November, so we figured it'd be fitting to review V for Vendetta. So break out your Guy Fawkes mask.
Hold on. Is this the one about the aliens that have the skin faces and they tear them off?
That's it, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, that one.
This isn't that V?
No, not yet. This is the one with the guy in the mask. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Voila! In view, a humble vaudevillian veteran, cast vicariously as both victim and villain by the vicissitudes of fate. This visage, no mere veneer of vanity, is a vestige of the vox populi, now vacant, vanished. However, this valorous visitation of a bygone vexation stands vivified and has vowed to vanquish these venal and virulent vermin, vanguarding vice and vouchsafing the violently vicious and voracious violation of volition. The only verdict is vengeance, a vendetta, held as a votive, not in vain, for the value and veracity of such shall one day vindicate the vigilant and the virtuous. Verily, this vicious soise of verbiage veers most verbose, so let me simply add that it's my very good honor to meet you, and you may call me V.
And welcome back to the podcast. Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot.
Yes, so much like that quote will never be forgot. I mean, V for Vendetta is probably one of my all-time favorite movies. I just really dig the way that the movie was made and translated, you know, from, you know, the graphic novel series and everything. So, you know, I just absolutely love the film. I don't know.
Well, let's start
maybe
there.
Maybe I got a little, you know, anarchy in my blood, so maybe that's why.
Well, let's start Rebel. There because I've not
read, Rebel scum.
I've not read through the. I've started working on it, but I've not read through the graphic novel by Alan Moore and David Lloyd. I know you've read it recently, so how? You know, tell us about it.
So the graphic novel. I mean it. It details a little bit more, I think, as far as, you know, the government overwatch and everything, quite a bit more than what the movie does. You know, it very much has a George Orwell feel to it, you know.
Yeah, very 1984 with all the surveillance.
Yes, and when they're talking
like
about the
alternative future where the Nazis won.
Yeah, well,
it's,
I mean,
it's very Nazi-esque.
Well, absolutely, you know, so if you want to, you know, fast forward and learn what fascism looks like, I mean, I think that is a very good glimpse of it. And I love the way that, you know, the Overwatch, you know, in George Orwell, you had kind of the all-seeing eye. Well, in V for Vendetta, they kind of compounded on that. So you have the eyes, the ears, the finger, the mouth, and, you know, everybody, you know, kind of comes together to, you know, keep watch over their own unique facets. And
yeah, the secret police are the fingers. They're the ones that, you know, grab you in the night and take you away. And then you have the, this is a time before, you know, with the book and in the movie too, is a time before, you know, NSA wiretapping your cell phones and whatnot. So there's literally vans, you know, with big microphones driving around the city, just eavesdropping on conversations. And so really no one's,
and if you think that's not happening today, you should probably open your eyes. So this will be a good episode if you will, to break out your tinfoil hats, because we're probably going to go down that rabbit hole.
And the mouth of the guy who does all the propaganda speech stuff. You know, there's like, yeah, there is those different.
Well, I mean, you facets. Got your, you know, your political spin network. I mean, I don't care if you're right leaning, left leaning, whatever. I mean, you can find bias in the media today, and I think that, you know, some of the stories and the news that get reported now, instead of relying so much on fact, are designed to create emotional stimulus to get people to lean toward a certain political agenda.
Well, that's completely true.
You know, so I look at, you know, a movie like V for Vendetta or the graphic novels, and, you know, I see things very much like how I think that, you know, the artists, the producers, and everything would want us to see, you know, through V's eyes. And, you know, so I like to think myself as one that's willing to kind of pull back the blinders and not afraid to, you know, kind of see the ugly truths and everything from that nature. And I mean, there's so many great quotes that come out of V for Vendetta. I gotta say, man, like, even reading, you know, the novel, like, I gotta give, you know, huge props out to anybody that can memorize that script.
Like, yeah, Hugo Weaving as who plays V, excellent job. I mean, you may know him from The Matrix as Agent Smith, and also the Lord of the Rings movies. And kind of, you know, fitting that he was in this movie, because this the movie version was written by the Wachowski brothers, the guys that did the original Matrix, and directed by James McTeague. But yeah, that Hugo Weaving, for a character that you never see his face, he's always wearing a mask, and it's not like Batman where you can see part of his face. He with his body language and his, you know, his voice, I mean, he that character emotes. Like, you could almost imagine facial expressions in that.
Well, I mean,
never changing.
And
mask.
There's the whole purpose and the premise behind the mask is, it's not so much about the mask or the flesh behind the mask. It's about, you know, an idea, an individual, and, you know, something that can't be killed by conventional weaponry.
Yeah, as he says, ideas are bulletproof.
I want to describe for a quick second. A lot of it is about the mask, about the anonymity it provides.
Well,
and
yes.
And the emotional response, because to a vast majority of people, I believe, a still non-moving face basically freaks a lot of people out.
Yeah.
It could be for good, for bad, but looking at that and trying to listen to somebody that's talking through a mask that's perfectly static.
He could
really generate like a visceral response in a lot of people.
Easily been creepy, but the way every time he speaks, it's so,
I mean, it's fluid, it's
education,
dynamic.
Educated and, well, yeah, proper and
true to the people that he is appealing to. But
he's like, you know, a Renaissance actor, pretty much. I mean, he has that way of just, you know, getting into you that we were, you know, if it was a creepy clown mask, it'd be creepy, but but he this, the way he portrays the character, just, you know, keeps it from being creepy. I mean, it goes from threatening to inspirational, but it never goes to that creepy zone, which could have easily gone to.
Yeah, but it generates a reaction. Not so much. I'm not just talking about creepy, but it generates a reaction just through the mask. The mask itself is a powerful icon just because of the reactions it generates, is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And then, you know, kind of to rewind back to the novel a little bit, you know, Natalie Portman's character, like, I think she absolutely does a phenomenal job playing Evie. But, you know, they really change her character in the movie, you know, versus the graphic novel. In the graphic novel, it's she's really falling on hard times. So when she's in the alley and bumps into the Fingerman, she's actually a prostitute trying to solicit the Fingerman. Ah. And, you know, they flip that in the movie to make her more of the victim character, if you will.
And but, someone who was like, you know, had it pretty good, you know, at that time. I mean, yes. She had definitely a painful past and stuff, but at that time, she's kind of, I mean, she works for the big, you know, news network and, you know, is
the man.
You know, could very easily just, you know, fallen in line and behaved and been okay, but, you know, she chose to stand up and go with V.
Which, I mean, you know, I
did she choose to stand up?
Well, she did pepper spray that guy.
I mean, at that point, you know,
saved V.
You know, when she made that choice to, you know, say, I can let him get captured or I can, you know, turn my back and not intervene. When she made the choice, you know, that kind of put everything in motion because up to that point, you know, V was kind of a one-man show, if you will, you know, just willing to instill ideas, but you know, Evie's
more
you know,
than instill ideas. Yeah. I mean, he didn't. I mean, V's got a body count behind him, a large one.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there were people in those buildings.
It was middle of the night. You know, they may have been. Your government shuts down at 5 o'clock. There's nobody in that building.
But
only the cleaning crew who actually didn't do anything but clean empty trash cans.
It's like the construction workers on the Death Star.
That's exactly where I'm going. That's
should have known.
That's exactly where I'm going with this.
But
you reconcile the deaths of people who literally had nothing to do with the atrocities that he's fighting with?
Then again, everyone who's complacent is also part of the machine of evil.
I mean, choosing to do nothing is a rational choice that
saying,
somebody makes.
The only thing needed for evil to survive.
Are you trying to say that if we choose not to decide, to
do
you still have made a choice?
Yeah. Like, if you, you know.
Fucking Rush. If,
yes, I just threw Rush in this conversation.
But yeah,
he set it up, though.
There's that old saying that, like, you know, the only thing needed for evil triumph is for good men to do nothing. And yeah, that's part of, you know, people are letting this government control them, and until V inspires them to resist, you know, they're all just kind of sheep on their way to the slaughter.
Well, I mean, and that's probably, you know, I mean, in fact, yesterday, as you know, kind of prepping for this episode and everything, I mean, I made it a point, you know, one of my, you know, favorite quotes was, you know, since mankind's dawn, a handful of oppressors have accepted the responsibility over our lives and, you know, that we should have accepted for ourselves. And by doing so, they took our power. By doing nothing, we gave it away. We've seen where their way leads through the camps and wars towards the slaughterhouse. And, you know, that was always one of the resounding quotes that stood in my head, you know. I mean, the remember, you know, the 5th of November is great. I mean, especially for anybody that knows, you know, Guy Fawkes and the, you know, gunpowder plot of 1605.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that because that's what this movie is kind of based on, and who V gets his inspiration from is Guy Fawkes. That's what the mask is the Guy Fawkes. And the 5th of November is Guy Fawkes Day.
Wait, you mean it's not just the Anonymous hacking group?
No. And we respect Anonymous. Please don't hack our website.
Yes please don't.
But I'll get to that in a second. But yeah, the Guy Fawkes plot was basically in 1604, a group of people that weren't happy with the current government was trying to blow up Parliament to prevent the succession of one of the, you know, kings or whatnot. And, but unfortunately,
yeah,
they got.
Well, it was actually King James the First.
And Guy Fawkes was the one given the job of setting up the explosives. But he was caught, and, you know, him and his co-conspirators were all hung, drawn, and quartered. But it that act of rebellion has, as time gone on, you know, popped up as an inspiration to others who aren't happy with the government or any kind of person they see as a social oppressor. You know, Guy Fawkes has kind of been the poster boy for rebellion ever since. And V is for Vendetta. You know, V and the Guy Fawkes match has also went on to inspire. That's why you see people like Anonymous and other, you know, shadowy groups that are trying to resist the government or, you know, the authority figures worldwide taking up that image as their own.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to say that, you know, Anonymous is, you know, I will say that they've been pretty, you know, unbiased. You know, they're not afraid to, you know.
They'll fuck with both sides of anything. And yeah. I mean, these are guys that are like going after, and girls too, going after like terrorist ISIS. I mean, Anonymous like waged war on ISIS and started like shutting down terrorist websites and all this other stuff. So, you know, good or bad, however you feel about them, you know, they're trying to accomplish something where most people, you know, bitch about stuff but don't actually get stuff done. These are people that are you know, risking their lives, you know, to, you know, fight the information war and keep people's eyes open. And, you know, they do, you know, they, you know, seem to be doing some good in the world, or at least trying to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, if you fail to, you know, try to instigate change and just let everything become stagnant, then, you know, once again, I feel like that's a rational decision that's being made that is going to have, you know, dire consequences at some point in time. You know, those who, you know, stand for nothing will fall for anything. It's kind of another one of those quotes that come into mind looking at things from that angle and that viewpoint.
Okay, but, I mean, yes, the person who fights against oppression, but the other side of that coin is the wanted terrorist who's responsible for the deaths of thousands and instigating further acts of violence.
Was he responsible for the death of thousands?
I mean, I guess that's arguable. Like I said, I mean, you're working on the assumption that these buildings are empty.
I mean, it was midnight. There's nobody in a government building at midnight.
The simple fact is that it's shown on screen that he kills a fair amount of people on his own.
But yeah,
before explosions, assuming that the explosions are just for show guys. And completely, yes, they're all bad guys. Bad guys are a state of being.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, it's depending on how
bad
you
guys
look,
are a point of view.
Yeah, depending on what side of the argument you're on, how that, because like I said, to some people he's a liberator, to people that are good with the status quo, he's a terrorist. Same way, you know, if we draw the comparison with Star Wars, to the Empire, the Rebellion's a bunch of terrorists. You know, but to, you know, the people in the rebellion, they're freedom fighters. So it's all, I guess, a matter of perspective.
Yeah, but it's a matter of perspective. And what's her name? Queen Amidala, what the hell is her
name? Oh, Natalie Portman.
Thank you, Natalie Portman. Evie. She is taken as she's rescued. She was
kidnapped for her own safety.
She was placed in a protective custody by...
Against her will, but still.
Which protective custody normally is, but still.
I mean,
and you could argue that she was essentially indoctrinated into his line of thinking, given that...
Well, I think that probably, and, you know, one of the things that it, you know, the movie fails to really go into a whole lot of detail is really the story behind Evie's parents. I mean, her, you know... parents were conscientious objectors and, you know, protesters and, you know, things to that extent. So, you know, from, you know, that viewpoint, I mean, her, you know, parents would have been radicals. So to say that, you know, their influences...
Well, there's a difference between conscientious objector and a radical.
Well, they were protesters and you know, fought without fighting. I mean, they were peaceful protesters, but
and blowing shit up are two different level.
Yeah, they didn't go to that extreme. But then again, their peaceful protest and got them killed. So it's
true.
It was deemed enough of a threat that, you know.
And drawing another comparison with Star Wars, the High Chancellor played by John Hurt, which was the War Doctor. Until you've seen him brought before V to be executed at the end, he's this only exists on this giant TV screen, lording above, you know, his underlings. And that's very Emperor-like. You know, the Emperor liked, you know, big holograms and whatnot. Or in the new series, the whatever, Snoke.
There's a lot of parallels to be drawn.
Where, you know, the, what's his name, MacReady, the head of the secret police and the finger, you know, he was the Darth Vader character, pretty much.
The George Weasley of the new movie.
George Weasley.
Or is that Fred? I can't remember which one.
He's the Darth Vader, and then the other guy who is the mouthpiece is more like the Grand Tarkin. He's like the military leader or the mouth of the Empire. And like I said, the other guy is Vader.
I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of cool how we can draw all these different parallels and ideas, you know, across multiple movies and, you know, even look at our world today and society and see a lot of these same struggles and similarities in a lot of aspects.
And also, if you look into how the fascist government that controls everything, how they came to power is they faked their own terrorist attack. That's how kind of V got created, is they were doing medical experiments trying to come up with a disease, and he was one of the experiments that kind of turned into a super soldier accidentally. But, you know, they created a virus, and instead of releasing it on their enemies, released it on their own people to generate fear and want, like, oh, please come protect us. Much like, you know, the Emperor started the war so he would get elected emperor so he could take over the world. I mean, it's...
And then you're now controlling both sides of the fight.
Yeah.
So the fight will stop whenever you say it stops.
Exactly. That's basically, they generated all this fear and then conveniently caught the people behind the attacks, even though it was them that was doing the attacking. And, you know, piece of their design occurred.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would almost, you know, look at that in some ways. I mean, you got big pharma, you know, the big pharmaceutical companies and everything else. Who's to say that, you know, a lot of the, you know, I mean, we hear more about cancer now in our lives than we've ever heard about before. So, you know, who knows if there isn't, you know, some kind of design that says, oh, you've got this ailment. Well, here, you need to take this drug to counteract that ailment, but, oh, there's a side effect, so you need to take this other drug to assist with those side effects.
And you'll be taking these drugs for the rest of your life.
Yeah, like, the original book was released in 1988.
Hold on, that didn't come out right.
Hold on. Wait a second. Put down the pipe.
Pro 420, man.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Just stop.
But, yeah, like I said, the original graphic novel came out in 1988 when there probably was a very high, I mean, it's high of the Cold War. You know, government mistrust was probably at an all-time high. Like you said, like the novel 1984 and all that. And the movie came out in 2006, but, you know, now 10 years later, it's almost fitting in with our current political climate where, you know, people are, you know, mistrust of the government is probably at an all-time high right now. And, you know, like I said, that's kind of why, like, you know, this topic came to mind is because it's the story of it is kind of fitting with today's society. I mean, you could almost re-release this movie and have just as big as impact.
Well,
as it did
I mean,
back
I just thought
like,
it was absolutely awesome that, you know, since we started doing the podcast, this is our first election cycle. And, you know, it just so happened that, you know, we were tossing around the idea and shit, you know, November 5th is going to be the weekend that we're recording. Like, I mean, just everything came together like it was meant to be. So, you
like
know.
Like tacos.
Like tacos.
Can't we all just get along and eat tacos?
Yes, yes, we
tacos.
Can.
Tacos. I'm hungry.
I mean, you know, the country is so divided right now. We just have to find something we can get behind, like cigars and tacos. As long as we can all agree on that, all is well with the world.
Fact.
Speaking of which, you should try Rockin' Taco. They have rabbit tacos. It's awesome.
Tangent.
We'll talk about that in the break.
There's a break? There's no breaks in podcasting.
And now we'll be right back.
But let's let's talk about the specifics of the movie. Like the first introduction to V, like that opening sequence of her getting ready to go out for the night and him getting ready to go out for battle. Pretty much, it's I like that back and forth of them two who will eventually cross paths and kind of, you know, come together. It was kind of funny. It was like, you know, a back and forth, you know, of like, here's the world with the shadow over its eyes getting ready, and here's like reality getting ready.
Yeah. And I think that was an awesome contrast that was drawn. And I mean, it's those contrasts that, you know, this movie, you kind of see it from, you know, all three, you know, so you've got V's perspective, you got Evie's perspective, and then you've got, you know, just all the individual branches leading up to,
yeah, because, I mean, they keep intertwining these spots where, you know, it's either V taking over the TV station and broadcasting his message that, hi, I'm the one that blew up the Justice Building, not, you know, the government that says it was an emergency demolition, and I want all of y'all to stand up with me a year from now on next November 5th as I'm going to blow up Parliament. And then there's also these things of the government news briefs trying to, you know, cloud him as a terrorist and whatnot. But he keeps showing the reactions of people of, like, there's guys watching it in an old folks' home. There's, like one looks more like higher class, wealthier family, a middle class family, and then your average people at the bar. So you keep seeing these reactions of these same people watching these different things being revealed on the news, and see their anger slowly building as the movie goes on to the point where there's, like, you know, the government saying, they're like, this is bullshit or bollocks, as the English say.
Oh, bugger. But I mean, I think that's so fitting. I mean, you know, when, you know, before V, you know, blows up the Parliament Building, you know, he's, you know, standing there and he's like, listen, you know.
Oh, that was the Justice Building. The Parliament Building was the end of the building.
So it was, you know, here's the overture. And then, you know, listen, now you can hear the strings and the brass. And, I mean, it's a build-up like you would expect
here's the crescendo,
classical,
and then,
you know, composition. And the film, you know, as it progresses, you know, does that same kind of build up into the, you know, final, you know, crescendo.
Yeah, with those openings, there are like the string and the brass, and then building to the crescendo of all of London showing up wearing the Guy Fawkes masks and hats that he had sent out. And, you know, and then, of course, the crescendo of shit getting blown up.
Yes. But, I mean, you know, I really, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know, you could almost like compare V, you know, when they're talking about rounding up the blacks, the homosexuals, the Jews, the Muslims, you know, basically anybody that this government has declared as a undesirable, you know, and locked away into a concentration camp and stuff. Like, you know, it's a lot of that aspect that, you know, really just kind of makes you take a step back and think, like, you know, could Nazi Germany really, you know, happen again in today's time? Like, you know, I think that's one of the overtones of the film that, you know, really just kind of makes me want to pull back the blinders a little bit and, you know, see that truth, whatever it may be. But, you know, when they break into the, or V, you know, goes into the freaking BTN news network, you know, that whole, you know, scene, you know, where, after he's already, you know, made his escape and, you know, they roll in all of the Guy Fawkes mask and everything and places them on all of the, you know,
yeah,
employees.
Yeah, so when they finally break into the news studio, it's all smoke and then there's like, you know, they shoot the first guy that comes running out and you know, everyone's wearing the mask and stuff and kind of, you know, concealing his escape.
So, I mean, I thought that was really awesome. Like, I, you know, I could see, you know, something like that potentially being, you know, done. I mean, you know, like, it's just so crazy to, you know.
Also in a time where everyone was, like, armed to the teeth, a guy with knives, for some reason, is just badass in that, you know. You never see him with a gun. He's just, like, slicing people right and left.
Well, I mean, apparently, if you want to learn to do that, you just got to watch The Count of Monte Cristo, you know, over and over, and you, too, can become a master swordsman.
I mean, that's how I learned to sword fight. I thought it was Two Musketeers.
No, it was The Count of Monte Cristo is what he was Edmund watching
Dantes.
On. Yeah, because Evie's asleep in the bedroom or something, and she hears him. Yeah. You know,
he's like fighting the suit of
he's
armor.
He's got the suit of armor, and she's like, oh, God, he's in a battle or something, and, you know, walks out, you know, the bedroom, and, you know, he's got the TV blaring, and, you know, about that time he chops off the armor's head, and it rolls.
And that was one thing, for a guy who's on a full-on vengeance kick, he had almost a childlike quality at times. It was like, you know, when he's not in battle mode, he's just, like I said, like an old actor, just enjoying life to the fullest, despite any kind of government imposition.
Well,
when you first see his house after you know, he brings Evie in, there's all these famous artwork and music and stuff, and it's like, you know, I got most of the stuff from robbing the government vault of censorship, or, you know, where they had captured all these things because they were, you know, banned items. And, you know,
I think that's why, you know, to your point, he can have that liberated spirit. He's got art, he's got music, he's got a lot of these things that are being censored from everyday people. So, you know, when he's not out, you know, being typical V, he's able to have, you know, kind of
not only is he trying to destroy the government, he's trying to preserve freedom and art and music and all these things that this fascist government is wanting to erase. I mean, we've seen that in, you know, back in World War II, where people were trying to, you know, save and hide works of art and books and stuff that the Nazis would have destroyed otherwise. I mean, there was a whole was it the Monument Men movie about the group that was, you know, their job was to go in and rescue these, you know, historical works of art before the Nazis got a chance to destroy them or, you know, sell them or whatever the hell they were going to do with them.
Yeah. More so say, these are ours. We will keep them because they will be valuable and make us mucho money. Maybe not, but.
And everyone will have a tiny mustache.
God. Tiny mustaches.
This one, besides the whole killing everybody thing, Hitler, you know, ruined this tiny mustache for most people. I mean, Charlie Chaplin, you know, made it famous, and then Hitler had to ruin it for everybody.
Yeah. So, let's see here. I mean, the Shadow Gallery is just
Shadow. That was the word I was trying to come up with. The Shadow Gallery
was just, you know, so iconic, and, you know,
and even when Evie first escapes from V, when she's still kind of not fully convinced, she's still she knows what she needs to do, but she's still afraid to do it. And then she goes to her friend Gordon's house, who is a famous British comedian, Stephen Fry, who's been in a lot of things. Love his work, but he's also kind of like, he has his own shadow gallery where he has like a Quran, he has, you know, artwork, you know, political artwork and stuff, and like he has this whole secret room that he has preserved stuff. And there is even the parallel between, you know, cause he's cooking the same breakfast for her that V did. And he's like, you know, well, she's like, this is weird. He cooked me the same thing. He's like, well, there's an expression of that. I am V, you know, underneath that mask. I'm an old English gay dude. But basically it was like the parallel is he is almost the same as V, but hasn't stepped up to that level of revolutionary. Yes. Like, this is what could have happened. You know, you can talk a good game and protect stuff in your little basement cave, but unless you step up and defend those things.
Hey, don't knock the
things,
nerd cave, yo.
But still, like I said, you know, if you don't step up and defend those things with your life, you're eventually going to get killed, which is what happened to him, you know, versus V, who is, I'm protecting this stuff, but I'm also willing to fight for these rights, not just, you know, support in the dark. And also when they do raid his house, because he's finally inspired to make a stand where he, being a comedian in the show, he does a political satire of the chancellor and you know, really, you know, hits him in the nuts with that one. So, you know, and they show up and basically kill him, but it's almost the exact same as the scene where they come for her mother, where yes. Evie's hiding under the bed and her mom gets thrown on the floor and is looking at her as she gets the bag put on her head. It's like pretty much the exact scene you see when she's telling the backstory of her parents.
Yeah, and, you know, that was... I don't know, you know, I mean, you know, do you really want to disappear in, you know, one of the black bags? Like, I kind of love, you know, that whole dynamic where...
Where, yeah, taking your identity.
Yes.
And then, you know, after that, she escapes and is what she thinks is captured and thrown into a prison and tortured, trying to give up V's location. But she never breaks. And she finds that letter from, was it Valerie? The actress yes. that was, you know, when all this stuff originally went bad, who was sent to the... And it's funny because, like, in the scenes where... I think it's the detective or V1 talking about, you know, the concentration camps and stuff. Or I think it's when the detective is reading the doctor's journal. You see this line of people that they've been experimenting on. And one of them is that girl that you eventually see in the reveal where Evie's reading her letter. And, you know, so you don't realize it's her until that, you know, and yeah, it's, you know, see, you know, once you find out that it's V putting her all this stuff, kind of trying to show her what him and others had been through so she would understand. He's like, you told me you didn't want to be afraid anymore, and I'm sorry, but this is the only way I could think of to, you know, relieve you of your fear. You know, but basically, like, you know, tempering steel. You have to go through that fire and the pressure to become hardened. And, you know, after she is, you know, escapes from the prison, you know, it's almost mirroring, you know, V's own escape. You know, and he's like basically creating another him through that process of, you know, kind of showing her the reality.
He essentially puts her through what he went through.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent. And I mean, I think I was
without the actual testing, yeah. You know, biological weapons.
And that was kind of the whole thing that I think that the graphic novels did so much better as far as detailing was, you know, V's time at, you know, the Spire resettlement camp. The
V is his room number. It was number, he was actually number 5 yes. in that prison.
So, you know, that was one of the things, and I think that, you know, through those trials, the experiments and everything else that went on, you know, and the settlement camp was, you know, why it's really kind of easy to sympathize with V's character more so than just looking at him as an outright terrorist.
Yeah, because,
you know, regardless of whether or not he blows up several buildings and come and steals a train and packs it full of explosives and
I mean collateral damage.
Yeah, I guess that's a thing, right?
I mean,
I guess collateral damage is a thing.
Our government used it.
Not so much.
It right.
Again, please do not hack our website.
Yeah. Yeah, but note, my objections are to drive the conversation.
But yeah, and I've got to finish reading the graphic novel, but yeah, I hope it does explain that. Because that whole sequence with Evie in the prison, yeah, the first time I watched the movie, I didn't really get it as much as until I recently, you know, rewatched it, and it made a little bit more sense.
And I think that's the thing. Like, in the graphic novel, and I'm going to try to give away too much here, but when Evie's, you know, actually, you know, V's essentially locked her away, you know, in the cell... The thing is, it's cold, it's dark, and there's a rat.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a hole in the wall with a rat, and, you know, Evie is just terrified of this rat, you know, that's there. So, you know, V, you know, she's handed a plate of food, and she's like, now there's a plate of food, the dark, the cold,
and a rat.
And the rat, you know, and that continues on for several pages, and you see
it's kind of like when I sleep on the couch, it's cold, it's dark, and there's a rat.
Yeah. Times two. Yeah. But, you know, that was one of
and
the...
And a cage. Don't forget, there's also a cage.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, my rats are caged, you know, despite all their rage.
Oh, fuck. Anyway, you were saying.
Do I bring out the worst in this podcast?
I don't know if it's the worst or the best anymore.
All right, dad joke. Continue on.
Thanks. I'll be here all night.
You live here.
Exactly. But, jeez, I completely
You were talking about the rat in the cage in the cold and Evie in the cell.
I remember what I was talking about. But, yes, Valerie's note, you know, comes into play. And, you know, as she's reading that, she continues to read it over and over again. And, you know, the whole depiction of, I don't even know who you are, but I love you for the person that you are, you know. And, you know, I thought that was really, really powerful, you know, in that sense that, you know, that's really your only, you know, lifeline,
yeah.
You know, at that point, you know, the only thing that you can grip and say that, all right, you know, maybe, you know, somebody, you know, they love so much, you know, a complete stranger and everything. So yeah. I thought that was pretty powerful stuff.
And also when, you know, when she eventually figures out what else, she tries to give the note back to V, like, you know, it's like, all right, this isn't so powerful now that I know you wrote it. And he's like, no, that was real. That is a note I found when I was in your situation, and reveals that, you know, Valerie was a real person, and he has the whole shrine to her with the and also she grew those roses, those flowers he was leaving on the people he was killing, and he, you know, still had kind of a garden for her. And basically, like, he was like, you know, I'm doing this not only to get vengeance for myself, which to me, my own vengeance doesn't really matter that much, but I'm getting vengeance for her and the other people that this government has destroyed. Because as he says, he's like, when she first asks who you are, and he's like, you know, you get the irony of asking a man in a mask who he is. He's like, you know, the mask doesn't matter. The flesh underneath it doesn't matter. The bone underneath it doesn't matter. It's the idea.
Yes. And I, you know, I mean, I think that's just what makes it so powerful, is, you know, and so many senses, a guy in, you know, V's, you know, I guess, you know, lack of a better word, you know, in his position, you know, he could make it all about himself, and you could still, you know, rationalize with him
yeah.
a little bit. But, you know, the fact that, you know, he's, you know, able to make everything seem less selfish and less about himself, you know, just instills that much more.
And the whole thing with the dominoes, too, where he set up the dominoes where they all fall except for one. They all stop that final domino from falling. And that's how pretty much the whole movie and whole book went, is like, you know, meeting Evie and all these little things, like setting up the surveillance on the one guy so he could convince him that it was his own government watching him. You know, he had spent years and years setting up all these dominoes that are all falling over to that single domino. And that single domino, which he has sitting in the train, is that last, like, where he's like, my work is done here. I leave this last portion up to you. You decide, Evie, decide if the train's going to, you know, leave the tracks.
Yes.
You know, and like I said, you know, he left that last domino to fall and left it in her hands. Like, you know, she could have been like, you know, you've done your thing. You've killed everybody you set out to kill. You know, I don't have to pull the trigger and start this revolution.
Well, that was kind of the thing. And I don't know that it was touched on as much in the movie, but in the novel, you know, V, you know, he definitely comes out and says that, look, you know, through revolution, you know, there is, you know, a time for violence. I am that violence. You are not violent. You know, you are the person that is down to earth and has the ability to, you know,
lead and rebuild.
And you are a creator. All I'm doing is trying to create you a blank canvas so you can rebuild something better.
Yeah. And there's also that whole sequence with when the lieutenant is asking Inspector Finch what he thinks going to happen. You know, because like I said, at this point, the hatred or the anger of the populace has been building and building and building. And he's like, what's going to happen is somebody's going to do something stupid and it's going to light this powder keg. And it's the whole time it's showing his voiceover. It shows like when V mailed out all the Guy Fawkes mask. So is the little girl with the glasses that we've seen through the whole movie running around in the mask and gets shot by one of the secret police. And the town raises up and, like, you know, beats the fuck out of this guy because he, like I said, it's that point the sheep has finally risen up. They, you know, they've become the wolves and they're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, that was kind of the thing too, you know, back at the broadcasting station where they shot the, you know, the innocent guy and, you know, basically tried to be like, oh, we've killed the terrorist and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like you said before, you know, that's what leads, you know, V to be like, hey, nope, I'm still alive, live and well. Like, you know, your government's not to be trusted, folks.
No, in truth, because the simple fact that so many people were willing to put on the masks coming to the close of the movie that,
yeah, when that,
you know, as I've been arguing, terrorist or not, his message was ringing true with a lot of people.
Yeah, and at that point, you know, the military guys could have quite easily mowed down the unarmed citizens. But by that time, V had eliminated the chancellor, eliminated the head of the secret police. There was no one there to give that order, and the soldiers on the street was stand down. You know, once you leave it to that, man on the street, that even though they're, you know, serving this corrupt government, you know, they still had a little bit of humanity left in them.
Well, I mean, I would think,
and
you
let
know,
the people come.
You know, God forbid, but, you know, if our government were to become so corrupt and everything else, like, you know, would the military personnel, you know, stand, you know, I mean, when they're sworn in, you know, under oath and everything, their oath is to the Constitution, not to the government. No. So, you know.
And I think I'm confident in thinking that a vast majority of military and law enforcement, if it came down to that kind of drastic thing, would not be on board with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's just one of the things that's kind of crossed my mind. You know, like, a lot of people talk about, you know, martial law and, you know, oh, there's going to be another civil war.
I love that character
and,
in
you know,
Tekken.
Everything to that extent. What was it?
I said I love that character in Tekken. Martial law. that was my favorite character.
That was your man.
Yeah. The Bruce Lee wannabe.
Licensing.
Holy crap. Haven't played Tekken in forever. We need to go to the old school arcade.
Tangent, gentlemen.
We're allowed to do this. That's why it's called a podcast.
Stay on topic.
Oh, that would be a miracle. But there's another thing, aspect in the movie, because when Evie gives her speech, when the detective, you know, finally realizes that, like, you know, this needs to happen. Like, I'm going to let you finish your thing, that the government isn't, because he's kind of disillusioned through the whole thing, and he finally comes to that decision where he ultimately does the right thing and asks Evie, who was he? And she's like, he was Edmond Dantes, he was my mother, he was my father, he was my brother, he's me, he's you, he's all of us. And when you see, like, all the people showing up in the masks, and then the Parliament building explodes and everyone starts taking off their masks, you see all the people we've seen throughout the movie. You see the guys from the bar, the family, the old folks home guys, all of it. But then you also see the people who had died throughout the movie. You see the little girl, you see the Valerie and her girlfriend, and all these people that, you know, so it's like, you know, we are all the victims, we're all the victors. You know, it's like, it's one of those, like, you know, everyone is V at that point. And I thought that was cool, kind of bringing those characters back that are dead, but yes, to show their, that, you know, they live on through this revolutionary idea that's been put forth.
Well, I mean, you know, 2016 has been a shitty year. We've lost a lot of great people this year. You know, and that's the thing, is those people, even though they may not physically be in the world anymore or whatever, their ideas and their inspirations and, you know, everything are going to continue to carry on, you know. You know, just because the flesh is gone doesn't mean that, you know, the ideas and everything else are, you know. So that's
David Bowie's music, Gene Wilder's movies. These things are going to go on forever. And like I said, you know, and these people's memories who, you know, V kind of, you know, honored by his, you know, sacrifice and his war, you know, their sacrifices aren't going to go away. Like I said, they're the reasons why all this stuff is happening. So it's kind of cool that, like I said, the first time I watched that movie, I didn't notice that these people were still there, part of the crowd.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, one of the final book of you know, V for Vendetta was The Land of Do As You Please. And that was, you know, one of the big symbolisms that I really liked was, you know, as a functioning society and everything else, you know, this is, you know, basically, you know, whatever you build at this point is what's going to carry on. But, you know, the whole, you know, take what you want from the government has, you know, since been uprooted. And I don't know. There's just so much awesome symbolism that, you know, I mean, it's just one of the reasons that I find this, you know, the books, the movie, the whole nine yards, like, just so powerful.
That was one weird thing, too, that watching it again and viewing it on what's going on today. You know, this movie is set in a future London, but in this, in V's world, America has pretty much destroyed itself. Like, there is a ongoing second civil war, there's disease, all this other shit that there's kind of the, you know, it, yeah, could possibly come true in the next, you know, decade or so. I mean, it's kind of weird that these things that they hint at in this post-apocalyptic world is stuff that's a very real threat in today's world.
Well, I mean,
that makes this movie almost, you know, more, you know, prothetic.
I mean, that's the thing, right? You know, those who fail to learn from history are condemned to repeat it again. You know, how many times do we see it that, you know, people put all of their chips in a government expecting, you know, an entity or, you know, another individual or something to have, like, I always view it as this, like, regardless of, you know, what political party is in power or this or that, at the end of the day, nobody has my own self-interest at heart more so than myself. So I'm not going to look to any political being to bring me prosperity or anything. I'm going to bust my ass and do what I need to do and let my actions, you know, dictate the, you know, the good things and the bad things that come.
Yep.
That. Oh, so was I supposed to say more? You looked at
thanks,
me.
Thanks, guys.
I mean, you were on a good, I mean, you were on a good rant. I was just going to let it go.
I don't have anything to add to that.
I don't know. I don't want to be labeled a terrorist. I feel like I should just stop there.
Don't blow up trains.
Yeah.
Our it's buildings. Bad, okay?
All right, Chef. Thanks for the...
Tell you one thing, too, that's kind of funny is, as big as this, you know, movie was, you know, Alan Moore, like, did not want anything to do with it. He was like, cause like, a, you know, he was kind of burned from some of his other graphic novels becoming movies that he was like, you know, I don't want royalties. I don't want my name associated with this movie. And yeah, it probably turned out to be one of the best adaptations of his, work.
Yeah, and I mean, I gotta say, man, like, you know, V, there's not too many DC movies that leave this impact that V did, so...
No, mainly because it didn't try to be a movie adapted from a comic book or a graphic novel. They said, hey, this is a good story, we're going to just make a movie with this story, instead of trying to gamify it and make it into something more.
Yep.
They didn't turn it into a expanded universe. They didn't turn it into brought to you from the comics.
What, we didn't just do a reboot?
Yeah.
Watch yourself. A reboot could always come.
Oh, you know, and I surely hope not. But, I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, once again, this movie wasn't necessarily so much about the man, more so the idea. So, I mean,
could
get a future, you know, adaptation that, you know, the idea has become slightly, you know, different. Or, you know, hey, we went down this path and, you know, a few generations later, people made the same mistakes and we found ourselves right back what, you know, this film tried to steer us away from.
Well, you know, you could argue that the reboot is happening right now. If you look across the world with the unrest that's happening everywhere and the use of the mask, not just by the quote unquote hacking group, but a lot of other revolutionary type actions over the last five or six years, the movie has reach And it spurred people to try to take that kind, either take that kind of message in heart or to use it to their own ends to drive their own revolutions.
Viva la revolution.
And that's as serious as I'm going to get.
Yeah. I felt like this was a serious movie, but at the same time, like, I'm glad that we can all come together and, you know, have discussions and share different ideas and facets and, you know, that's one of the beauties of podcasts that I really enjoy that I think a lot of people miss. You know, they're like, oh, so you guys talk about topics and this and that, but, you know, it's really about the awesome conversations between a group of friends.
And sharing it with all of you, our fine listeners.
Who are also our group of friends.
Man, it is what it is.
So as we kind of wrap things up, final thoughts. What do you have? Is there a particular character other than V that you particularly liked in the story? Because we all can agree V is a badass.
Yeah, I mean, true. V is a badass. I don't know. I think I really kind of like Creedy's evolution, you know, where he starts out, you know. Wasn't he, let's see.
Creedy was the secret police leader.
So he was the agent that ends up shooting V, right? Or was that?
Yeah, he's the one that shoots the chancellor and, shoots V.
So, you know, his progression, you know, like, you see it through the movie where he's like, I really want to capture this guy because I want to have a conversation with him before he disappears into...
No, that's Detective Finch.
Yeah, so it's Finch's character. Because, you know, he's like, hey, this guy has done, you know, some things outside of the law, but I really want to try to get his story and,
He says when he has that conversation with McCready, it's really hard to investigate this when all my witnesses end up disappearing.
Yes. So, you know, his progression throughout the movies and everything, I like his openness and his willingness to try to find that truth and, you know, and actually, you know, let justice prevail.
Yeah, because at the start of the movie, he is one of the heads of the political parties. He's the head of, you know, the police. Not the secret police, but the actual police. And is taking orders directly from the chancellor. But, you know, he starts to see that maybe this government that I've dedicated my life to isn't the right thing to do. And, you know, eventually, you know, kind of comes to V's way of thinking by the end.
So, you know, it was that aspect of his character that I really liked. So outside of V or Evie, you know, that was probably, you know, I think, you know, in looking at myself, like I find myself doing a lot of soul searching when I watch this movie. So, you know, I could see myself in his position and questioning that maybe I don't have all the information and the facts and everything the way that, you know, whoever I'm working for would like me to have.
Yeah.
So for you, who would you choose?
Yeah, the detective character, I liked Stephen Fry's character because he was, like I said, you know, ultimately, you know, he started off as, like, you know, someone who could have become V, where he is hiding all these things and secretly, you know, revolting in his own home without, you know, stepping up and doing it in the streets. But then he eventually, you know, after listening to Evie's story and all that, tries to stage his own revolution and, like, throws out the censor's approved script and does his own show where he really, you know, sticks it to the man the only way a entertainer can, and, you know, ultimately gives his life for that cause.
Hey, isn't it funny how, like, the comedians and stuff like that, like, looking at today's society, are the ones that can, you know, oftentimes, you know, get away with saying some of the off-the-wall shit and the idea of, quote, entertainment? Like,
well, it's true. You know, if you go way back to the original comedians,
you give a lot of latitude in the name of humor.
Yeah, the court jesters. Those are the guys that could give the king shit, and the king allowed it because they were, that needed stress relief for the masses.
You have a funny hat. I will allow it.
Yeah, same person that's easily replaced when you piss him off.
Norm, I know it's been a while since you've seen the movie. Is there anybody that stands out in your head or anything?
Really? As far, not so much as a personal admiration, but as far as the movie goes, the progression that Evie goes through from the beginning to the end is really interesting to watch and see how...
Yeah, from helpless victim to revolutionary herself.
Yeah, to revolutionary leader, basically. Yeah. I mean, she... Basically, you could argue that she is the one that blew up the apartment because she sent the train. She's the one that actually did the thing.
She was the Princess Leia.
Yes, she was the Princess Leia.
Or the Queen Amidala.
And stay tuned for our next episode where it's V for Vendetta Star Wars.
Not to be confused with the porn version V for Vibrator. But as we wrap this up, any final thoughts on the Kruger?
Yeah, it cut my throat.
I'm going to have bad dreams all night long about it. No.
Good cigar. Actually, it's a damn good cigar. And, you know, it's stayed a consistent medium full. That spice has been there, you know, throughout the smoke. I got to say, man, like, here we are, you know, a freaking hour later, and I probably still have a good 30 minutes left on this smoke. So even, you know, given the smaller, you know, diameter of the cigar or whatever, I mean, this thing is lasting a long time.
Oh, yeah. Well-constructed, a nice burn. And yeah, it kind of had toward the middle a little bit of kick up and power and then back to that medium plus. But the complexity has stayed throughout. So yeah, if you can find one of these, definitely pick them up. Or when the Skinny Monsters box comes out, you know, give that version a try. If that's, because those are usually a little bit easier to find than the, you know, actual monster releases.
Those get a little bit wider release than the actual monster do. But yeah, another
and then we'll
success
have Matt,
by Tatuaje.
Cigar shop incoming, George.
Yes, another knock out of the box for Tatuaje. And yes, we currently have them in stock at the cigar shop incoming, Georgia.
Shameless plug.
He did it too.
I did go to the cigar and donuts and coffee event the other day, and
that's Pearl, with Perla de Mar cigars.
Yes, that's a good good breakfast smoke. Like I said, I'm not usually a morning smoker, but the Connecticut wrapper and even the Maduro was had enough strength that it didn't bore me, but it was mild and smooth enough that it was a good, not going to overpower you cigar for the day.
Yeah, not to sidetrack from the monster, but yeah, the new Perla de Mar Maduro cigar recently released. It was medium?
Yeah, like I said, it was
mild,
a nice,
medium to medium,
smooth smoke throughout. I enjoyed it.
A little bit of strength, but not too much, because you don't want most people don't want too much first thing in the
morning. 9 in the morning,
but,
yeah, with a coffee and donuts, it's not something you want to smoke a monster at.
Smoking a cigar and having a donut first thing in the morning is an underrated thing that a lot of people don't try, and you really should.
Like I posted on my Instagram, Breakfast of Champions, cigar, donut, and Arturo Fuente coffee. And with that, we'll wrap this up and be right back.
Stay tuned.
Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. First, the overture. Yes, the strings. Listen carefully, can you hear it? Now the brass.
I can hear it. Look outside, Bonnet. The fine music. How did he do that?
Wait. Here comes the crescendo.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time for Beer 30. And kind of with our Halloween hangover, as I'm calling it, because we've had a few spooky things in this episode, even though it's now November. What are we drinking this week, Brad?
Well, this week we are drinking a beer called Fear of Ghost, and this is dubbed a smoked sour farmhouse wheat ale.
Made by Stillwater Artisan Ales in Maryland.
Yeah, this is brewed by Crazy Mountain Brewing Company, and you know, this beer, it pours very hazy with a thick head. It is
very tart and citrusy,
and it is everything that you would expect when you hear the word sour sweet or sour farmhouse wheat ale. Like, I'm not quite sure where the smoked is because I don't really
taste anything smoked. Notes to it.
It's almost like drinking a Warhead in a glass.
Yeah, it is a bit on the sour side. Nah. It's considered an American wild ale, and what they mean by wild ale is the yeast strain. It's used wild yeast strain, so it's not something that's regulated that much. So that's when you get those strange sour flavors is with that
most
wild
people,
yeast.
You know, this, and this has a lot to do too, you know, as home brewers, you know, when you know, you're actually fermenting your beer. Sometimes if you don't sanitize your equipment quite well enough, you will get some of those wild yeast strains that occur naturally in the air, and those can add some of those sour grapefruit notes and stuff to your beer.
Definitely grapefruit citrusy.
And, you know, with a sour, a lot of times that is done intentionally, whereas most of the time in the home brewing world, when you get those off notes, it's because your equipment wasn't as sanitized as it should have been.
Yeah, and because most of the time we're using a, you know, regulated strain of yeast in the fermentation process where you know what results you're going to get from that product. But with wild yeast, it's kind of like a crapshoot at times. And yeah, this is very sour. I mean, I like a wheat beer occasionally. It's a good, like, you know, warm weather afternoon drinking beer. The Sweetwater Sweet is pretty good. But yeah, the sour wheat beer, not so much.
Yeah, I mean, it's not my favorite style.
I mean, if you are a hophead and like a bit of a bitter note, I mean, this will do for you. Or, like I said, it's a...
I mean, well, that's the thing is...
If you're a fan of grapefruit, it's a good breakfasty beer, probably.
If you like grapefruit, I would say... This beer, to me, is not... I don't taste a whole lot of the hop. Like, I don't get that bitterness. I mean, this is truly just the sour. Like, I have yet to be able to take a nice gulp of this beer and not pucker up afterwards. Like, that's... Like, it's almost making my cheeks hurt from puckering. Like,
yeah, if you're someone who likes you know, the sour sweet tarts or any of the sour candy, this might be the beer for you.
Yeah, or if you just, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, it's not my choice. I mean, you know, but that's the reason we kind of do the podcast in the Beer 30 is it's not necessarily to just talk about beers that we enjoy. It's for us to experiment, try different, you know, beers that are out there and, you know, whether they're good, bad, you know, to everybody's palate is a little bit different. So.
And this is what happens when you buy a beer based on name alone and don't read the description on the bottle.
Well, I think we kind of read the description. We were like, oh, it's a smoked sour. Like...
No, that's I'm not really getting any smokiness at all. Yeah, it's just straight sour for me. But like I said, if you are into the grapefruit flavor in the more sour beers, this is probably an excellent example of that style of beer. It's not a bad beer. It's just not for my palate. It's not something I personally enjoy drinking. But for someone who does enjoy that type of beer, it's a pretty good beer.
I do want to try this, so if you will hold the mic for just a second while I relight, like...
See how it tastes with your cigar?
Well, I mean,
This segment was recorded earlier, so we're not smoking the Kruger that we reviewed in the main episode. This is a Flathead 660 pairing.
I mean, I'm just kind of curious with the full body of the Flathead and everything. Like,
I I mean, I gotta say it's paired with the cigar and like a mouthful of smoke. It kind of cuts that citrusy bitterness or sourness. So this one might be one, you know, if you have a really, because we've talked about pairing beers with cigars before. And
nope, that sucks.
See, it wasn't that bad. Like I said, I'm smoking the Punch Signature Series right now, and it kind of cut the flavor. That thing when we,
I can tell you, all it did is just piss me off because it fucked up my cigar.
Yeah, because like when we said when we're talking about pairing cigars or bourbons with beers or whiskeys, if you have a strong cigar, it may overpower the flavors of the drink, or vice versa. If you're drinking something strong, you don't want to be drinking or smoking a mild cigar because it's also going to cover up that flavor.
I guess this is why you don't pour black pepper on a lemon. Like, that would tell you it probably does taste good. Like, that's about the best description I can give. So go slice a lemon in half, put a few, you know, sprinkles of black pepper on it, and just chomp into it and see how that goes.
Like I said, the Signature Series, though, pairs pretty good. It kind of cuts some of that sourness for me.
Yeah, I think I was more disappointed because it didn't complement the cigar whatsoever. It just... I tell you what, this is how this beer is going to pair, is I'm going to finish this beer, and then I'm going to smoke this cigar to get the taste of lemon and everything out of my mouth, which, people that know me, I like coffee, I like bourbon, I do not like grapefruit, and, you know, like, so, I don't mind lemon.
What are you going to rate this one on the Cigar Nerds Untapped app?
So... my personal preference, this is not my style of beer, but I gotta say, you know, judging from what a sour should be, from the look, everything else, this beer is a solid 4, 4.5 as far as style and everything else. From my palate and my personal taste, I'm at probably a 2.5 because I don't really like this style of beer.
Yeah, I already rated it on my personal, and that's what I gave it, was a 2.5, just based on my taste profile,
like, you know,
said,
and when
I'd say, if you are a fan of this style of beer, it is a good example of that style of beer. So if you are a sour drinker, I can recommend this beer. If you're a stout drinker like we are, it's not not for you.
And with that, we'll be back.
Hey everyone, venture into the pop culture cosmos today, where you'll hear our conversations on different topics within the world of movies, TV, video games, comic books, technology, board gaming, and more. You'll also get a taste of some of our other shows within the cosmos as well. So come on and join us each week as we delve into the pop culture cosmos.
Welcome to the pop culture cosmos.
And welcome back to the show. It's time for science. You ready to learn all there is to learn in the world of science and shenanigans?
But my brain hurts.
That's okay. It's just a hangover. Take some aspirin and hydrate.
I'm hungover?
Have a Strike Force.
Woohoo! Shameless plug.
Yeah. I still got to order the bottle of 100. Because that 10-pack I'm getting a month is not enough. I've almost blown through it. I've got to get that 100-shot bottle they do now.
I saw up somewhere where a company had, you know, some of those mounts, like you would, you know, mount like, you know, any kind of like a cleaning bottle or whatever. Anyway, they had a Strike Force, you know, one of the bottle dispensers there. So it's like, you know, oh, get my Gatorade, hit a few, you know, dashes of Strike Force, carry on.
Yeah, I introduced it to my girlfriend. Now she's hooked, so I'm going to have to get the big bottle so I can... so she'll make me share.
Get your own damn bottle.
Speaking of brain farts, you know, we've always made joke that, you know, you have fart so bad that it could probably kill somebody, but this time it almost did.
I don't think that's a laughing matter.
Oh, it's not for them, but for the rest of us, it's pretty fun. in a Tokyo hospital, there was a surgery going on where they were doing some sort of laser surgery on the, you know, cervix, intestinal area. And apparently the patient farted and the laser ignited the fart, which set fire to the surgical room, causing burns over most of the patient's body. Which in itself, not funny, but yeah, that's... don't fart around your lasers, people, because they could explode. Especially in a hospital where it's... That's why they don't let you, like, have open flames, because there's usually oxygen in use, and a pure oxygen environment, fire will explode. So, yeah, that's... something that's going to happen, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know. That's kind of crazy. Like, I just... Something just doesn't sound, you know, right. Like, I mean, I... You know, how much, you know, methane would it take, you know, to ignite? I don't know. Maybe
you can light a fart. This is an experiment that I may have done done before. So, yeah, I mean, speaking of our friend Mike, I remember in high school we watched, might have been like the first South Park movie where Kenny lit a fart and caught himself on fire and died. And we're like, is that a thing? Can you really light a fart? And Mike tried it and almost set his nuts on fire. While driving down the road, too. Like, we're driving home from the movie theater. He puts his feet up on the dash. He's like, hey, watch this. Whoosh. And I about wrecked the car laughing so hard. So it is entirely possible to get the right gas-to-air mixture to ignite a fart.
All right. Well, good, good.
Just remember, try not to burn your asshole. Because there has been people that have hurt themselves severely doing that because the fart went up inside them and... burn their intestines. So
you don't want to get a back blast.
Don't try this at home, kids. Let's just put that on the table. We are professionals. And we have a stunt guy to Mike, because I ain't doing that shit. Oh.
And this is educational? How?
I mean, it's a cautionary tale. It's a tale of safety. Don't fart near a laser.
For who? Steve-O? Speaking of which, where has that guy been?
I don't know. I saw him in a Steel Panther video the other day. Speaking of cautionary tales, it's not nerd news or nerd science without a possible Skynet story. And we were just talking about how Google eerily, like, you know, you look up something and now it's in your ads and stuff. Like, I'll walk into a store and Google will, like, send me a message about, hey, yo, this is on sale today.
It's crazy to think about, you know, the scenario that we used is, yes, I understand you're typing in search terms and all of that information is getting tracked. But, you know, I receive a text message. I don't even click on a link or anything. I refresh the web page I'm on and instantly, like, it's information tied to that text message I just received.
Yeah. But Google's AI developing team, they've been working with neural nets, which is basically computers designed to mimic the human brain, which we're going to get in some Skynet shit eventually, because now they've taught computers to develop their own cryptography. So now, like, not only can computers talk to each other, we can't read what they're saying to each other because they're able to program their own secret codes and secret languages. Martin Abadi and David Anderson of the Google Brain Neural Network Project basically made an experiment where they had two computers communicating with each other, one named Alice and one named, I think it was Bob or something, and then a third computer, Eve, who her instructions were to spy on the conversations between Bob and Alice. And the only instructions they gave Bob and Alice was to prevent this from happening. And on their own, these two neural networks designed their own code language within, I think, 7,000 messages.
It was their own code, but didn't they also encrypt said code?
Yeah.
It's
like, at the start of it, you know, the other computer could read all of their messages, but within 7,000 cycles, it was... getting about half of the messages. So with time, like I said, these learning computers can, you know, communicate without, you know, anyone reading their messages. So yeah, Skynet. You want Terminators? This is how we get Terminators.
Encrypted Terminators.
Because now they can plot against us and we can't read it. All right, Google. Like, Yeah, if it's not Elon Musk and coming up with shit that's going to destroy us, you know, now we got Google. I'm determined Google is going to be Skynet. Like when the apocalypse happens, it's going to be a freaking Google app or something that's going to take us down.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I mean it's definitely interesting. I don't know.
I mean Google's. I mean at this point you can talk to Google. I mean it's becoming Jarvis, and soon it's going to become Skynet. I'm waiting for the whole
or Cortana if you're Microsoft.
I'm waiting for the whole Google House thing now, where it's like, you know, because right now I can look up something in my phone, and when I go to my computer, it automatically like connects what I've been looking at my phone to what I'm looking at on my computer. You know, at some point, it's Google's going to be everything.
Well, I know that, you know, you're seeing Wi-Fi enabled, you know, washing machines and refrigerators and that type of thing. Yeah. You know, and one of my friends had actually sent me an article, or not an article, but she was like, I am so freaked out right now. It's like my refrigerator like has tracked everything and is recommending like dinner choices and all of this other stuff based on things that I've looked at. And, you know, like
I'll tell you when to buy new stuff or when stuff's expired. Or, I mean, and that's kind of cool. We're like, you know, I know occasionally we're like, oh, we've got all this stuff. Like, what should we cook? You know, I mean, it can like read what's in your fridge and give you recommended recipes on what you have on hand. So yeah, it's the level of integration today is getting insane.
I'm scared.
Speaking of insane Wi-Fi enabled, have you heard about the exploding washing machines? Apparently, Samsung's been making washing machines and they've been exploding. Kind of like the phones.
Like where the lids could, you know, potentially come off or whatever.
Apparently there's like two screws that like hold the thing together, and they use like cheap screws. So these things are like falling apart at high speeds. People have been injured from flying debris.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, like mass production, I understand. It's good for profitability or whatever, but, you know, with the, you know, lowering of quality assurance and, you know, durability, like I don't know, I think more and more companies are going to have to force to, you know, rely a little bit more on,
they got to increase their quality control. Yes. Cuz I remember
quality control, and you know what, like I operate under the mindset like I don't care to pay a little bit more for something if I'm going to get a much more durable product. Like I don't expect you know, to. Part of the issue is like people will be like, oh, I don't shop at Walmart because all the products are crap. Versus, you know, they'll go to a Lowe's or Home Depot and pay three times the money. And guess what? When you pull apart everything, it's all made by the same cheap ass company on the inside. Yeah. It's just a different logo on the outside.
That's like, I remember during Halloween, I was looking at a thing of like weird Halloween costumes, and there was someone dressed up as a suicide bomber, but instead of dynamite on the vest, it was Google 7 or Samsung S7s.
Yes, I saw that.
The explosives. Moving on to some space news. I'm not going to say it's aliens, but make my hair all weird here, it's probably aliens. Curiosity, the Mars rover Curiosity, is kind of on its way up Sharp Mountain to move to another area that it's going to be surveying, and it's found a metallic meteorite that's, you know, which meteorites are not uncommon on the surface of Mars, especially since there's an asteroid belt nearby. But this particular meteorite is mostly metal. They're estimating it's made out of nickel iron, but it looks like someone has polished this thing. It's like a smooth, shiny rock with, you know, some crevices and whatnot in it, but it looks kind of like, you know, when you melt down a piece of metal and just, you know, kind of like drop it in water where it kind of, you know, bubbles up. And so it's for, you know, with the rocks everywhere, this shiny metal orb just kind of
stands
weird.
Stands out. It's like, huh.
Aliens or space marbles?
Space marbles. I don't know. Maybe God's into playing marbles.
Could be. But yeah, the Curiosity scanned it with its ChemCam remote micro imager and got some of the closest detailed photos of this thing that we've seen. And it's, you know, like I said, it's not unheard of, but it's kind of interesting in the
not blending.
I mean,
with
it's
the rest
one of those
landscape.
Things. Like, you know, I've seen, you know, pictures and images where it's like you're looking at the surface, but that one object just stands out.
Yeah,
like
in a sea of like
so
red
out of
dirt.
Place.
This
yes.
one shiny object out in the middle of nowhere just kind of makes you think about yeah, what's going on out there in the world, or makes you want to go watch The Martian again because that's actually a pretty good movie.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. Like. It was one that...
It's one that's, like, always on at the cigar shop randomly.
Well, it's funny. Like, as much as we hang out at the cigar shop, I'd always catch, like, the beginning, the middle, or the end. I would never see it in its entirety.
I think at this point, I've finally seen the whole thing.
Yeah, I finally sat down and watched it. I realized that with my Comcast subscription, I get HBO for free now. I'm sure that there's a hidden charge somewhere. That,
yeah.
But, yeah, it was a damn good movie.
Well, also, you know, kind of relate back to Halloween just passing. Got a werewolf warning for you, because if we're going to get werewolves, it's definitely going to happen this month. Because on November 14th, we have our first supermoon. A supermoon is because the orbit of the moon is not, you know, circular. It's elliptical. So it's different times. Well, this is like the one time that it's at its closest point. And also a full moon. So it's going to be the biggest, brightest moon that most of us has ever seen. Because the last time it happened was 1948.
So I know that night I am not getting any sleep because it's so weird. When there's a full moon, I don't know if it's just because it's bright or whatever.
I mean, that's
but
where the term lunatics come from, is the increase in weirdness during full moons.
Falling asleep during a full moon. And
yeah. Yeah, this is the first time a full moon and... it being at its closest point, which they call perigee, has happened since 1948 and will not happen again until 2034. And apparently it will be at its brightest early in the morning just before sunrise. So, you know, if you feel like waking up at 5 a.m. on the 14th, you're going to see a big-ass moon. And it's not just me hanging my ass out the window. It is a legitimate supermoon, which is what I always
That's
also call
no
it when
moon.
I hang my ass out the
That's
window.
That's a space station.
Yeah, freaking Death Star going to show up, and it's like, it's the perfect time. They'll believe it's the moon. It's really going to be the Death Star. This is where the aliens finally show up and drop their shiny balls at us.
Aliens and shiny balls. That made me chuckle. I have learned nothing. I am still as immature as ever.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
So, extensive lineup, and with no further ado, we're going to go ahead and jump into this mix. So, one of the cool things that I really enjoyed that Netflix did, caught the internet by storm, is Stranger Things. So,
yeah,
season
we did
2.
Episode of that at
yeah.
one point.
You know, we already know that there's going to be a season 2. It's you know, already in the works, everything to that extent. One of the cool things that I stumbled across is there was actually like this little news segment that was done. It's like 2 minutes that basically, you know, goes on, you know, talking about the hunt for Barbara, like a missing person
yeah.
report type thing.
I do like the fact that, like, since it's supposed to be set in the 80s, the reporter's like, you know, describes wearing a sweet set of mom jeans, or as we call them today, jeans.
Yes. That and, you know, the whole ego thief and...
oh my God, I saw so many people carrying freaking boxes of Eggos around Dragon Con doing the 11. Freaking Hardwick even posted a picture of him dressed up as 11 with a bunch of freaking Eggos. I'm like, that show has done more for like Eggos popularity than like anything. They don't have to make advertisements anymore. It's like,
no, yeah,
like,
the branding is
I
no
bought
longer...
a big, like a 24 pack of Eggos after watching that damn show. Cause I was like, man, I haven't had Eggos in years. Yeah, remember Eggos?
Member. Oh, the damn member berries. But yeah, I just, you know, I think it's really cool. You know, we're kind of getting that resurgence. I mean, an opportunity to, you know, it almost gives kids today a realization of our childhood and what made our childhood so awesome. Like, you know.
Things kind of repeat themselves. And like the 80s are kind of coming back in a big, bad way. I'm just waiting until the 90s come back so I can, like, you know, rock my hammer pants and shit.
You'll never be able to rock the parachute pants. But you know, speaking of Stranger Things, Funko Pop, you know, they do a whole lot of the, you know, collector vinyl figures and stuff. Well, they've now got a full Stranger Things collection, which I thought was really awesome.
Do they have a Gormagon?
They do have the Gormagon.
Oh, yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, it's the Demogorgon.
Yeah, Demogorgon. I was thinking of something else.
Yeah, so they got the Demogorgon, Barb, Dustin, Eleven with her Egos. So,
yeah. They should tease it and say they're releasing the Bob figure and never do, so everyone is like, where's Barb?
But yeah, then you can get, you know, Mike and Dustin, Lucas, Will. So, I haven't got into collecting some of the, you know, freaking Pop stuff just
Director
because...
Director Faber is probably very excited.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure with his extensive collection of everything that they will be on his list and...
Yeah, I can't collect them because, like, they're like crack. Like, once you get one, you want them all, and it's a never-completing set because there's so many of those. I mean, you just go into, like, the Think Geek store just opened at North Point, and there's, like, a wall of Funko Pops. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous how many of those things there are nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's really kind of cool, you know? It's so expensive to be a nerd.
Yeah, I mean, we would have to build an extra room in the house to contain the Pops.
Well, I mean, shit, collecting. I'm still, you know, working on, like, I keep talking about it, but doing shelves just for, like, my freaking geek model car collection that I've built and assembled and stuff. So, you know, I mean, geez, I'd have, like, we're going to have to, like, theme rooms. Like, oh, yeah, this is the Funko Pop room. This is the model, you know, our Legos, our, you know, whatever else that we can think of to collect. And then, oh, down here is we're going to house all the comics. And
speaking of toys and collectibles, and I don't remember seeing it on the list of topics, but half of the Star Wars battle drones.
Yes, those were freaking awesome.
And I can't remember the name of the company right offhand. I don't have the notes in front of me, but at this point, there's no word on what they're going to cost. Like, if you go to their website, you can actually reserve one, but it's so early in production that they're not even mentioned, like, what it's going to cost you to get one. But you can go ahead and get on a list of, like, pre-orders. But it's a quadcopter drone that will go up to 35 miles per hour. But these things are equipped with lasers and are made to play a drone laser tag game. In the initial release, they're going to have a TIE fighter, which looks like the Darth Vader's TIE Advanced, the Millennium Falcon, an X-Wing, and one of the speeder bikes. And the models are super detailed. Even the on the Millennium Falcon, like, the engine lights light up. They look amazing. I mean, I've wanted to get into the racing drones because I think that's potentially a great new sport. I love watching some of the videos of the racing drones, but the freaking battle drones, that's going to be insane.
Yeah, so this is made by a company called Propel. They do a lot of RC stuff. And, you know, what they've got here are these are actually, you know, battle quads. So, you know, they're going to, you know, have speeds above 35 mile per hour. But each, you know, quad is equipped with basically a, you know, laser and... You know, I think you can battle up to 24 quads simultaneously. So if you wanted to have a freaking intergalactic, you know, battle, you could.
From the looks of them, they don't have cameras on them like the racing drones. But if they put the pilot perspective camera on those things, oh my God, it would be like having like a freaking real dogfight. It'd be so awesome.
Well, I mean, they'll accelerate, according to the website, you know, 0 to 30 seconds and approximately... are 0 to 30 miles per hour in about 3 seconds.
Yeah.
So, you know, the freaking speeder bikes and everything would just be awesome. But, I mean, you know, I don't know the price points or anything else to that extent.
So, no, it's like, when I went on their website,
you know,
it's like,
they're set to
click
launch.
To reserve, but, we don't know what they're going to cost yet.
Yeah, I mean, they're and it should be happening soon because of, once again, according to the website, it should be launching fall or, you know, winter of 2016.
Yeah,
so,
they'll probably try to get those out by the Christmas rush because I know that's going to be on, you know, plenty of Christmas lists this year. I mean, those little the freaking BB-8 droid thing, they sold tons of those. So I can imagine what these drones are gonna.
I haven't seen a whole lot of marketing. I forgot how I stumbled across the article.
I think I saw it
on
a Facebook feed one night.
I saw it in something, and I sent you the text saying, "Hey, I know you wanted to get into the racing drones. This may be, an interesting step into that. I don't know about getting a drone that is going to accelerate to 60, 70 miles per hour, and how good I'm going to be able to control it and everything to that aspect. So
learn to fly with the X-Wing and then upgrade to the race. Well, the thing with the racing drone is that front-mounted camera gives you that first-person perspective, so they're super maneuverable. That's one of the harder things of flying drones now is you're just kind of looking at them, but you can't really see where they're heading. So you can't really slalom through trees and stuff safely because you really don't have that perspective. But with the racing drones, you can do all kind of crazy shit because it's like you're in a cockpit.
Yes. Speaking of crazy shit, and since we're kind of talking about drones and stuff, one of the little cool articles I came across with anybody that's got an Android phone, you can now control certain functions using OK Google and some of the Harry Potter stuff. So you can actually use Lumos to turn on the flashlight, or Nox to turn it off, or Silencio to control the volume of your device and stuff. So I thought that was rather interesting.
Because I've seen they make a Harry Potter one, and they also make a Doctor Who one, which is a universal TV remote that's a wand, and you have to do different maneuvers with the wand to control the different functions of the TV. There's no buttons, so you'd have to do all these little casting freaking motions to control whatever. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, at one point, I was looking, and I thought that they had kind of created a wand that you could do some of that stuff with. But really, the wand is just a prop. It's more just Google, partnering with Warner Brothers. It's kind of like a promotional tie-in for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. So. I don't know. I never really got into the whole Harry Potter thing.
I think we should start a Harry Potter restaurant. We call it Fantastic Beasts and Where to Eat Them.
Damn it. That's dangerous. Oh, shit. Quick. Get a copyright and a patent on that right now. patentsrs.com. Skipping further ahead, I know how much of a fan of reboots you are, so I just had to throw this in here for kicks and giggles, but apparently there is a Starship Troopers reboot in the works. So Columbia has, to take another crack at...
I'm not so offended by this, because it's not like something that came out last year. I mean, how long ago was Starship Troopers?
Yeah,
probably going on
20
years now.
Close to it.
And it's not one of those that's I don't know, they've made a bunch of direct-to-video sequels and stuff.
And I really
it's not one that I freaking hold sacred like Ghostbusters or, God forbid, Back to the Future. And also, it's one of the exceptions to my rule is you shouldn't fucking reboot shit is when the technology has advanced enough to make it better. Starship Troopers, great sci-fi movie, but with today's levels of CGI and whatnot, it could potentially be cool.
Yeah, and this isn't going to be so much of a remake according to what I've read. It it's going to be more of an attempt to adapt the novel on which the film was based. So I don't know, Damien, Mark Swift and Damien Shannon, they basically wrote the scripts for the recent Friday the 13th remake and also the upcoming Baywatch movie.
that I'm actually sort of looking forward to.
And, basically then you've got Total Recall's producers, Neil H. Moritz and Toby Jaffe, who will be, producing the film. Yeah. So,
and that Total Recall reboot was not that bad.
No, it wasn't terrible.
It was kind of like the RoboCop one. It was different enough that it was a standalone movie. I hate it when they do a reboot and it's exactly like the original.
Yes.
And then kind of just falls way short of that. With these, it was kind of inspired by. It wasn't a direct remake of it. It's kind of, the story was similar, but it was different enough where if you hadn't watched the originals and you didn't judge these based on your memories of the originals, they were pretty good standalone movies.
Yeah, not bad. So, anyway, just wanted to throw that out there. I'm not necessarily going to crap all over it or anything. I will give it a fair shot. To your point, I don't mind a reboot or a remake as long as, you know, it isn't just the exact replica, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's got to have its own flair or something a little bit different, or to bring things maybe more up to speed with the technology and the times. So speaking of...
The Poltergeist remake wasn't that bad either.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, like I said, there's potential for good remakes.
Yeah.
There's way more potential for bad remakes.
So as we know more, we will keep folks updated. But kind of to your point, speaking of speed...
I'll at least wait to see a trailer before I bash it.
I know you've been, you know, watching Flash and, you know, trying to catch up on all those seasons.
Yeah, since I've not watched TV for a month because of Netherworld, I'm slowly catching up on the last month's DVR backlog.
Well, we reported, you know, previously in one of our episodes that Tim Miller, the, you know, director of Deadpool, or producer rather, was no longer...
He directed the original.
Yeah. Was not going to be a part of Deadpool 2 any longer. So, what has he done? He has moved on to, you know, freaking making a Sonic live-action CG hybrid film with Blur Studio.
As in The Hedgehog.
Sonic the Hedgehog. Which...
The fuck?
I mean, back when Saturday morning cartoons were worth waking up to, yeah, I mean, Sonic there was a Sonic cartoon. And I can say that I thoroughly enjoyed that. Now, kind of a live-action hybrid of Sonic, I don't know. I mean, that's...
Have we learned nothing from Alvin and the Chipmunks and Smurfs? The live-action cartoon reality just...
I don't know, man. Like, think of the...
Hasn't been that good.
I mean... Roger Rabbit pulled it off, and I mean,
that's
even though
one of the last,
and,
like,
well, I mean, Alvin and the Chipmunks, man. I mean, it kind of took shit by storm.
The
I mean,
first one,
I can't
I never saw
say
the
that
sequels,
I was but... actually a huge, huge fan of it or anything, but you know, there were a lot of people that, you know, just that synonymous name, Alvin and the Chipmunks,
and the first was pretty good, and I always liked Jason Lee, so like I said, it, yeah, that one wasn't bad, but yeah, I mean, there's so much action in Sonic that it's going to be a weird, I take that back. You know, the Ninja Turtles movies, live action movies turn out to be pretty good, even though like the new ones with a CG character, if they do it, yes, with some kind of like realistic CG character where it's not like a cartoon in reality, but more of a realistic CG Sonic. I mean, that might be an interesting way of doing things. You know, historically, video game movies have not done very well.
Yeah.
I mean, Super Mario Brothers, for one example. But, I mean, like I said, I'll judge it when I see a trailer for it. But I think that would have been much better as a full animated movie. It's like Wreck-It Ralph or some other, like, Pixar, DreamWorks, something like that, cartoon movie. But, yeah, I don't know how well you're going to be able to translate the speed of Sonic into live action.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll just have to stay tuned. I mean, you know, just talking about some of the Saturday morning cartoon stuff and everything else, where the hell is Dennis the Menace? Is anybody going to resurrect that? Like, I don't know. Food for thought. Like,
Dairy Queen.
I don't know. I don't know. I've always been a big fan of Dennis the Menace. Like, kind of remind me of the shenanigans I'd find myself in getting into at times. So we'll switch gears a little bit, talk about some video game stuff. So there is a new Mass Effect coming out really soon, I think. In fact, I think it comes out the day that this episode is going to air, on November 7th, if I'm not mistaken. 8th.
It was a Tuesday.
So, you know, basically this is going to be Mass Effect Andromeda. And I got to say, man, I've really been a big fan of the Mass Effect games. I mean, they kind of tied in some RPG elements, but at the same time, like, they're just all around a solid video game.
Yeah,
you know,
I've never played
shooting
any of the
Mass action
Effects.
Everything has always felt real good. The stories are just so immersive and have been, you know, freaking amazing. So this is a game that...
Yeah, I'm just now getting back to where I have time to play video games again, and I'm a little behind on my gaming. I just recently upgraded to the PS4, so I've not really played any of the old Mass Effect games, but I've always heard great things about them. And this, you know, some of the videos and stuff of them, they look pretty badass. So I mean, I may have to jump into the Mass Effect world.
Yeah, I mean that's gonna be one. I really wish that, you know, with all the technology, we could get cross-platform servers, so that way, like, you playing on PS4, I can hop on the same server as you from my Xbox or whatever.
Have you seen the latest trailer for Call of Duty Infinite Warfare?
No.
Man, there's one. It's live action battles with like celebrities and stuff, and at one point it has Michael Phelps like fixing to dual wield some guns and take out this alien, and he runs into the room and something blows it up with a rocket launcher before he can get to it, and it's what's his name from Tropic Thunder? That guy. And he's like, "This is my pool, fish boy." It's fucking hysterical. And Phelps just looks so disappointed and he didn't get to kill anything.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I just...
Danny McBride. That's who I was trying to think of.
I don't know if I can get behind it or not. You know, forcing people to have to go out and buy a game that they really didn't want in the first place to be able to essentially download this content. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm really opposed to, you know, the kind of the whole, like, oh, we're going to pre-order, you know, stuff, so that way we're going to force you to, you know, buy this game. But then, you know, in addition, you're basically going to have to buy the game all over again with all the DLC content because we never really finished the game in the first place.
Yeah, DLC is starting to piss me off a little bit.
And
send me a complete game.
Yes, like, you know, just that whole aspect, like, you know, and then, you know, the freaking, oh, I buy a game, but then there's, you know, more, you know, in-game purchases and everything else if you truly want the experience. Like, it's going the way of the mobile app, and I'm like,
games have gone
I'm already paying for an internet connection, either an Xbox or a PS Plus, you know, subscription, on top of forking out, you know, $60-$70 for a new game. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, essentially games have now, like, doubled in price. Like, you know, they used to be, like, $60. Now they're going to be, like, $100 because you got to buy the game, and then you got to buy that $50 season pass to get all the DLC when it comes out. So yeah, it's not a cheap man's sport anymore, unless you just wait a year until it's on the Xbox or PlayStation free download for the month.
Yeah, at least there's that. So switching gears a little bit again, flashing back to another live action movie that's in the works. Looks like Universal's working on a live action Voltron movie.
Damn right. I mean,
Netflix
series is on point, so I'm interested to see what they do with a live action.
Yeah, I mean, I really dug the Netflix and, you know, the DreamWorks animated stuff that came out.
Everything
with
I'm seeing of the new Power Rangers looks good, so I translate that to, especially if it's like a Pacific Rim type movie.
Yes.
Where it's like, cause in Pacific Rim, I mean, it was enough combination of CGI and practical that you believed you were seeing giant robots fighting.
Yep.
So I definitely want to see that in a Voltron. And speaking of superheroes, we have a new Wonder Woman trailer.
Yes, we do. And I gotta say, man, like, I was not necessarily a big Wonder Woman fan. Not the fact that it's a female character or anything.
Dude,
just
Linda Carter is the shit, man.
You know, just
old school Wonder Woman.
But she kicks ass and looks like a total badass in this trailer.
Yeah,
like,
I was skeptical when Gal Gadot first got cast, because like, but she's on. I mean, it's amazing. Like I said, it and okay, you can say that Captain America did it first with the period piece superhero movie, but instead of World War II, it's World War I.
Yes,
it's also somebody with a shield. so there are some similarities there, but
boobs.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that scene where she's like, it's our duty to protect the world, something like that, and like the crawling up out of the freaking trenches of World War I and just diving into, like, you know, straight at the Nazis or well, it wasn't the Nazis then, the German soldiers. That's a badass sequence. I'm like, I think that they've learned their lesson from Batman v Superman and have kind of lightened up the tones of these newer movies. So I'm going to give this one a shot.
Yeah, and another movie I haven't got around to seeing yet, but you know, I looked at the figures prior to us doing this recording, and I gotta say, man, I was really amped for Doctor Strange, and I'm really glad to see that it's, you know, based on the projected numbers, you know, Thursday opening, I think they were at like $9.8 million. They were anticipating, you know, grossing somewhere between,
I think it was like, you 80 know, was the last
60 million, but yeah, they've The last projected numbers were, you know, upwards of $80 million. So, you know, it looks like Doctor Strange has exceeded, you know, people's
expectations.
Yes. I'm like, cigar burp, or, you know, just lost my train of thought. Something there. I don't know. That was weird. But
yeah, that's, I got to see that sometime this week. That's looks like it's going to be badass.
Yes, absolutely. So once we get an opportunity to see that, we will give folks our 2 cents worth.
Yeah, we'll probably talk about that in, you know, at some point during the next episode. And as we wrap things up here, check us out on CigarNerdPodcast.com and on the ESNO network at ESOPodcast.com. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you find your podcasts. Also check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at CigarNerdPod. And with that, remember, a revolution without dancing is a revolution not worth having. Peace. And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.